It's that time again. What time? February. Oh! Foreign Film February. It's the time. Foreign Film February time. What's the time? Foreign Film February. It's the time. What's the time? It's the time. Foreign Film February. This opening doesn't rhyme. It's the time. Foreign Film February. What rhymes with Foreign Film February? Not much rhymes with Foreign Film February. So we'll just rhyme this time with time. Oh, I see. It's February, so it's Foreign Film February time. Thank you. You're welcome. Music.
Everybody, welcome to New World Pictures Podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Until I saw this movie, I had never really considered an elevator as a place to hang out. But now I think there's a lot of value in that. I think I need to find myself an elevator.
And Erica.
Before this movie, I never realized that it was so easy to run with a tenor sax. I always thought that seemed challenging, but
it's just like a shuttle run. Just you got to put one hand back. Just hand me that sax. Hand me that sax.
Tuck the sax behind you.
That's what they did for the original Olympics. The relay. They just handed off a tenor sax in a case. They had cases back then for tenor saxes. They weren't fools. They also had saxes.
They weren't savages. They had cases.
Come on. They were working societies. My lord.
They weren't just raw dogging those saxes. Sounds dirtier than it is.
They created aqueducts and roads. You think they couldn't fucking put a sax case together?
Give me a fucking break. Hey, welcome everyone to Foreign Film February. Duh.
Very good, Ryan. Very good.
We're going to talk about all the foreign films released by New World Pictures. And honestly, we've been through three Sextembers. We're going to be on eventually to our fourth of Mark's Miserable Marvelous Maze. But Foreign Film February, we might be able to do that for 10 more years. There's so many
boy.
Foreign films.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Shouldn't
oh, boy.
This be Foreign Film February?
Noise.
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 Dois.
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 Dois. Dois. So that's Portuguese?
Yes, for Portuguese.
Dois. Yes.
That's right. We really needed to brush up on our Portuguese before we watched this particular film. We're talking about our very first film in our Foreign Film February 2. We're talking 1987's Subway to the Stars.
Haben Sie Schwierigkeiten, mich zu finden?
Kein Problem. Haben Sie die Papiere?
Wir sind endlich allein und Sie denken nur an Ihre Papiere. Sie verderben alles.
Sie verderben doch alles. Man lädt Sie irgendwo ein und Sie sprengen gleich den Safe in die Luft.
Das sollten Sie nicht so eng sehen. Ich mag keine Safes, das ist alles.
My apologies. That's actually the trailer to 1985 Subway. My apologies.
No, wait, hold on. I think I got it wrong, too. So what we're trying to do is...
Foreign Film February 2nd.
Or
filme estrangeiro 2 de fevereiro.
Right? Is that it?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
You got that
down?
For,
that's
filme
right.
Filme estrangeiro 2 de fevereiro.
It's just so slow. Okay, got it. So we're not talking about 1985 Subway. We're talking about 1987 Subway to the Stars, brought to you by the clarinet.
Saxophone.
There's nothing quite like the smooth sound of the clarinet.
Saxophone.
Men love it. Women love it. Kids love it. Heck, everyone loves the clarinet.
Saxophone.
If you're looking to break out of the real slums and kickstart your life with your girlfriend, there's no better instrument to play your little heart out than the clarinet.
Saxophone.
Ryan's recording this episode from inside of an elevator. It's a deep cut. If you've seen this one, you should watch it. You'll be cackling.
It's a deep cut in general. This whole movie, directed by Carlos Digues, who's also known as Kaká Digues, the director of 1980's Bye Bye Brazil and 2003's God is Brazilian, which co-starred Wagner Moura, who is currently nominated for an Academy Award for his work in The Secret Agent. And if you don't know that movie, he was also the lead in the Narcos TV series, if you're more familiar with that. Or he was the lead in the Elite Squad movies, which are great if you haven't seen those. Digues is a founder of the Cinema Novo movement in his native Brazil, which began in the 1960s and used film to critique social inequality, being inspired by both the French New Wave movement and Italian neorealism. The movement was cut short, however, by the military coup of 1964, which began a military dictatorship in Brazil, which began to wear away by the late 70s and returned to democracy in 1985. Digues also co-wrote this script, which is considered a loose remake of the 1959 Albert Camus film, or Camus film, because I don't know if it's Albert, Camus film, which was in itself based on the 1956 play Orfeo do Conceição, Orpheus of the Conception, which was written by Vinicius de Moraes, so likely the source of the first name of our main character, Vinicius, or Vinny. Both in the play and the film, they take the story of Orpheus and they set it in a poor neighborhood in Rio. So that's what they did for both of those, which kind of is this movie.
Kind of.
Sort of. A little loose.
Yeah.
If you consider his trying to find his girlfriend a descent into Hades, just traveling through the city, talking to various people, then
I could see that.
Here's where you can watch the movie. At the time of this recording, it is in a couple different places. It is available on Shout TV and Tubi.
Tubi.
Or you can go on to eBay and get yourself your own VHS copy.
Look at how fun the font on the title makes it look like you're going to have. The Subway to the Stars!
Looks like it's going to be a comedy. It's going to be like an old throwback to 1940s comedy.
This is going to be fun. It's going to end well for all involved. Subway to the Stars.
So those who are hearing this, it does have sort of the Honeymooners font going.
Yeah, it looks fun. It's like red, maybe, or pink.
Pink.
Looks like it's going to be a good time.
And you're like, oh, that looks fun. And then it says, in the seedy underworld of drug dealers and prostitutes, a young musician searches for his lost love.
Yeah.
Oh.
I feel like whoever wrote that description.
Wish I had read that.
Whoever wrote that small description should have also just gut-checked the font.
Yeah. Is this what we're going with, guys?
I know we're not at final questions, but is he looking for his girlfriend? Is he?
Yes, that's what he spends the entire time doing.
I know what Mark's saying. No. Feels like he starts that way.
Is he looking? He gets other people to look.
He has a man's commitment to finding his girlfriend. Oh, we'll get there. I'm so glad you introduced this question. He's looking as hard as a young man can.
Thank you.
By making it everybody else's problem, including dreamy grandma, who's just at the market, I guess, 24/7. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Where's her? Yeah. Where's her guardians? Where are her guardians?
How is she not getting robbed blind? Probably poor use of words there. How is she not getting robbed constantly?
Yeah. I know we're not a final question.
She is getting robbed blind, like literally every time anybody walks by that table and sees that huge stack of oranges. They're just like, I'm taking one. She's not going to see it.
She's not blind, though, wasn't she?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah,
she's
blind. Indeed, she is.
Oh.
She's blind, and they left her deserted in an empty marketplace overnight.
I didn't realize she was blind. I thought she just didn't, I thought she was having, like, memory issues because she kept talking about her, like, saying the same memory over. Oh, she was blind?
Erica's blind to what blind people look
like. Oh, my God. That makes that font even worse. Oh, God. Oh, no.
Yeah, just when you think this movie, it didn't go the extra mile for potential blind.
I need medical attention. I need medical attention. Oh, man.
Any part of this movie that you're like, oh, it's like this because of just, you know, a happy potential reason. Or
incorrect.
It's like, no. It's much sadder.
Much sadder. Yeah.
Much sadder.
We're just going to put that out there. Spoiler alert. You think it's going to be a saxy, but it's a saddy. I thought it was going to be a real saxy, but it's not. It's a real saddy. So just let her swap there.
Erica, just to add to that, I don't mean to be the spoiler. I don't think this is a spoiler, but people should know. Very low amount of Subway in this movie. In fact, a
lightly peppered Subway. Lightly peppered with Subway. Yeah, the Subway is arguably the dessert in this meal because it is at the end. Yeah,
it's the coffee after the dessert.
Yeah,
that's fair. That's fair.
It's when you do want a little espresso now that you've eaten and had your dessert.
Yeah. And then I guess just leave those dishes on the Subway when you're done. That'll make sense once you watch it, but just leave the dishes there. Just, who cares?
Yeah. Sure.
We've already gotten into it, but let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Subway to the Stars about?
It doesn't matter what city you're in. If you're in a heavily populated area, you need to have your wits about you. You can get robbed. You can get jumped. This is anywhere in the world, okay? And you can have things stolen from you anywhere in the world. But the one thing that no one will ever steal is a saxophone. Ever. That is... So, really, take your wallet out of your back pocket.
Especially a tenor saxophone, because it's large. It is
take
large.
Take your wallet out of your pocket. Stick it in that saxophone case. You're good to go.
Oh,
no
smart.
One's ever going to steal that. Ever.
Smart. Boy. I feel like Dreamy could have used that advice, but yeah. Thanks. Thanks for giving it now that it's too late. Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Well.
Erica, what is this movie about?
I don't know, Ryan, but I'll tell you what it's not about. It's definitely not about saxophones. I'm just going to say it. I went in with the real promise of some saxophone enjoyment. And it
starts with saxophones. Like, it's understandable.
It starts with the promise of saxophone. Yeah, and I was locked in.
It doesn't start with a promise. It starts with saxophones. I mean, it goes right into it. For me, I thought this movie was about sometimes when you start a new entrepreneurial venture, you need to cut ties. You gotta start. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You don't want the personal side to bleed into the business side. You're just gonna need to start all over with a brand new life. So
yes,
that's
for
what
sure.
happens.
For
it
sure.
happens. But look,
do not learn any lessons from this movie, Ryan. Do not learn any lessons. Oh, wait. Actually, do learn a lesson. Learn that I will leave no stone unturned. I will let no one else leave a stone unturned in finding you if you try to walk away. All right? So,
Just know that. Just know I will make sure it's everybody else's problem to find you.
Yes, yes.
You will go to the ends of the earth to find other people to find you. Like, to shocking extremes.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yep, I'll even pull in my own mom!
But let's, that's what we thought this movie's about. Let's go to Letterboxd. We're on Letterboxd, so give us a follow if you like. If you dare.
Ooh, this, I dare you. I dare you to give us a like.
God, I dare
you to give us a five-star review. Follow us. Come on.
I know you won't, but come on. Let's see it.
Yeah. I dare you. Dare you. If you have any triple balls, you. You'd do it. You'd follow us. In this, and that's not just towards the guys. That's towards the ladies, too. You know I'm talking about your lady balls.
If you had any balls, you'd follow us. Oh, God.
All right. In this highly stylized Brazilian drama, a sax player fondly remembers one wonderful night. This isn't told in the past tense.
Anyway. I feel like this movie takes place over like 48 hours.
Right. I think it does. Right?
Okay.
Maybe even longer. I mean, there's a lot of day and night and day and night and day and night
before maybe
our lead takes his first shower.
Yeah.
I know we're not on final questions, but I thought, how bad does Venus smell?
Oh, he stinks, smelled bad. Right? He smelled real bad. Yeah.
He's cute, but he stinks.
Yeah. Anyway, he fondly remembers one wonderful night spent with his life's love and decides to find her again. This is all like in past tense, as if he's just like thinking back.
Yeah.
Like he's, no, that's not, okay, that's they're that's being not tricked. How this movie,
they're
it
being
happens
tricked by the
in,
font.
In, yeah.
Yeah. Letterboxd got tricked. They got duped.
Yeah. Yeah. He embarks upon a quest through the wild streets of Rio to find her. Along the way, he meets an assortment of odd urban underworld characters.
What? Wait, hold on.
Okay.
Some of them are
his family members, so rude.
Some are family members, some are police officers, some work for the press. Are these all underworld, underground people, or...
I mean, according to Letterboxd, they didn't trust anyone in this.
Okay. I mean, it is uncomfortable, the scene where he asks his mom for help. And I hope, Erica, if you had to ask your mom for help to find Ryan, it would be under different circumstances than it takes place in this movie. But
hey, man, sometimes you got to ask your mom for help when her titties are out. You know, that's just part of it. You know, one day my own kids might come to me and my titties are out, you know, and they ask for help. And I'm like, you know what? No,
it's her job, guys. Yeah. And I'll say no.
That's why you have just those pasties lying around just in case they ask.
That's right.
You want to have their job.
So you got to tape them or glue them back on. It's right. You know how they are.
Yeah. Sure.
They don't make anything to last anymore these days. Not even pasties.
And as all Letterboxd synopsises end, the violence escalates throughout. No.
That's so true.
But we do open with saxophone. We open with Vinny playing a sax, and he loves the sax. He's just playing along with records. And he's excited because he's got his first studio gig. He's going to go into the studio and he's going to play a gig. He's so pumped about it. He tells his friend in the building. Vinny is played by Guilherme Fontes. He's a Brazilian actor who's still working to this day. And whom a review of this movie and the Philadelphia Inquirer referred to as the Rob Lowe of Brazil. And I can't unsee that now.
Oh, but neither can I.
It made me wonder, does that mean that he has a sex tape? Or...
Erica's showing fingers crossed.
Oh, fingers crossed.
Audio double fingers crossed.
Did he also go through kind of a drug problem for a little while there that he's on the other side of?
For a little bit.
Does he do ads for Atkins in Brazil?
And also pet food.
Like, he's followed Rob Lowe's career beat by beat.
Just letter perfect. So he gets to the studio where he is playing with real-life Brazilian singer Cazuza, which is sort of how we bookend the movie. It starts in the studio, and then he sort of ends with a gig at Cazuza. Cazuza playing himself here. He actually, that is indeed the singer, Cazuza, where they play Heavy Love, the song, in the studio, until Vinny takes his playing a little too far.
Esse cara improvisar. Quem mandou esse cara improvisar, pô? Ô, oh, do sax! Ô, oh, você do sax! Ô! O que você tá fazendo, pô?
Yeah, he messed up. He messed up.
Bad.
Honestly, should've let him go. Live horns make every song better. Should've let him go. Should've let him cook.
Well, it's funny you say that, because he messed up so bad that sax is not in the actual song. Of course, this was an actual song from Cazuza's album, Ex Gerardo. And let's play this little clip of it. Doesn't sound like there's any sax. No sax. Kind of a, was it a mistake, do you think?
Yes! Always! Yes. Always have live horns. It will always make it better. Think of a song where live horns made it worse. You can't. You can't. I know we're not at final questions, and I am asking a final question, but I don't want an answer, because the answer is none. Zero.
Well, that song may lack sax, but...
I'm not sure about that one. Careless Whisper from George Michael. That fucking sax in that is horrible.
What?
It's way over the top. Way too
much. What?
Way too much.
A saxophone is over the top, Mark. Think about the instrument. That's what it was built for. It was built to be over the top.
I'm saying they could have just cut it out and they would have had a different song. I still wouldn't like the song, to be honest. And
oh, boy.
You can mark at newworldpicturespodcast.com.
Oh, boy.
You can email me.
Man.
But, you know.
This is meant for the Samantha cast, but that's a strong disagree.
Mark, the ska community would like a word.
That's different. That's different, Ryan. Very different.
Okay, well, that song may lack sax, but this movie does not lack sex, because Vinny meets up with his girlfriend, Nasina, and they celebrate his first studio appearance. He's so excited, and they celebrate in the best possible way by having sex in a junkyard.
Oh.
When Isn't you it a find junkyard? A woman, it feels like a dump. It feels
a dump junkyard. When you're finding a woman that's willing to get butt ass naked and have sex with you, her body
around,
she's on bottom, willing to just take in that motor oil and transmission fluid and everything else, no problem. I mean, once you find someone like that, really the shackles are off. When you get home, you move in together. It's like, hey. Is it cool if I clean these carburetors on the dining room table? She's going to say, why do I care? we had sex in a junkyard. When you're like, yeah. Hey, is it cool if we just let all the feral cats come and hang out in our house? She'll be like, why do I care? I had transmission fluid in my butt crack just a few nights ago. We're good.
For a week.
I still haven't got all of it out of there. So why do I care?
That's why he works so hard to find someone to find her.
Yes. You know?
Yes.
Because he's like...
She was down a pound in the junkyard. I got to find her.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is basically his descent to try to find people. So he goes, of course, to the police first, who promptly interrogate him. And then while the lieutenant is taking a leak, he hands the detective a photo of his girlfriend, who then the lieutenant drops it in the urinal, which could easily be the grossest thing in the whole movie. If he then, the lieutenant, hadn't then thrown Vinny onto the open toilet seat when he finds a joint on the floor. I was so disturbed with this scene because I was like, this is so gross.
I know we're not at favorite scenes, but is least favorite scene a segment that we're willing to introduce? Because if so, this movie and others take it.
Number one, just is it supposed to be funny that he's brought in and then he has to basically watch while the lieutenant pees? It's got to be funny, right? Like, it's awkward, though. It plays so awkwardly. It doesn't play like a comedy scene.
I don't think it was meant to be funny. I think it was meant to show, like, how much the lieutenant just disrespects him.
Yeah.
What bothered me, that scene started off with something that in real life annoys me, which is people that want to have a full conversation while you're at the urinal.
While they pee, yes.
And you're like, we can pause, and we can pick up our conversation when we're done with this.
And I'll just say, don't try it with me because it's impossible. I will not be able to have a conversation and pee.
How could you pee for that long?
I need to have the pee, and then we can talk. I cannot do both. It's just not. It's never going to work.
It's like rubbing your tummy and tapping your head. These two things can't work together.
We'll never get out of that bathroom because I will never pee.
Also, you've never had a short conversation, so I don't know.
Correct. Hence this podcast.
It's been a 5-year conversation.
To make matters worse, is Vinny, or whatever his name is, decides that he really needs the
attention.
His name is
Vinny. You got it.
I thought it was Vina.
Vina? Yeah, Vina. And decides to...
Vinicius is like his name, but anyway.
Decides to go sort of behind the urinal, so he's standing face to face while he's peeing, which is an aggressive move.
Yeah, it's good, better for the camera, but worse for like two people. Yeah, it's like not... really awkward when you start thinking about it.
I don't know. I don't use a urinal, but arguably you're either looking at someone's...
You don't use it well, but you do.
You forgot to say well again.
I'm done. This is added to the episodes where I quit. This is it.
So the police are not much help. So Vinny goes off on his own. Mm-hmm. To find his girlfriend. He talks to her parents, but they're no help. One of them, the dad's a drunk, and he's just hanging out in the elevator to avoid Nasina's mom, who's just standing around in darkness in their apartment.
Just watching TV, watching soap operas.
Yeah. Just cannot stand the light, I guess.
Like Mario from Mario Kart, but he's playing Mario Elevator, just hanging out in the elevator.
Right, that was originally in one of the original Mario Kart, just as an option as a
elevator
game.
Elevator level.
Did not test as well as the actual racing games. Mm-hmm. In this game, kids, you hang out with Mario in an elevator. He's a little drunk, so he's not going to tell you the things that he needs. You need to get some information from him, but he won't tell you what you want.
You can either select underwater, Rainbow Road, or drunk elevator. Which level do you want?
Yeah. And when he turns on the light just to freak the mom out, I was like, is she a vampire?
Oh, that was terrific.
What is happening?
That was happening? Every time someone turns on the light when I'm half asleep, I was like, yep.
Oh
yeah,
my God.
Freak out. Just scream until someone turns it off. That's effective. Yeah.
Then that's a good point, Erica. Was she half asleep and he just came in and woke her up and then turned on the light? Like, That is some balls. Talk about balls.
I think she was just locked into the TV, and so her eyes had kind of adjusted to the darkness, and when he turned on the light, it was like, ugh, too, you know, too real. Do we have a category that's called saddest scene? We might need to introduce it. And then saddest scene.
The sad scenes keep continuing. They don't. Mm-hmm. They don't just end. Mm-hmm. Begin and end here. They continue.
Yep.
He goes to a gig in a club, and he sees one of Nasina's coworkers, and tries to see if she can help him out. But all she wants is for Vinny to kiss her and then slap her around, which he's not into. Thankfully,
not slap, punch her.
He goes then to the press, who at least know how to show him a good time by taking him to see a dead body. And
to be fair to the press,
that's when this movie takes the Stand By Me turn.
Yeah.
They go walk.
Yeah,
come with us. Dead body. Come on, hang out.
Guess what, listeners? Get pissed off. I've never seen The Godfather, but I've seen Stand By Me. Yeah, get pissed off about that. Yep.
Yes, and he does not.
I think they would have been pissed off if he hadn't seen that as well.
I've also seen all the Fast and Furiouses. Fast and Furious. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gets a leech on their weenus in this movie, so
we don't know that.
Distinction. Well, yeah, that's fair, that's true. Erica. That's fair. We don't know. He goes to see his mom now. We mentioned she's an exotic dancer. She's no help. She gives him a ton of shit. It made me start to think: has he not thought of trying to maybe offset all these people that won't help him and do some actual detective work, maybe, and like do some legit investigating? Like, he's not. I don't see how his mom was going to help him to begin with, but
what about roommate uncle? He's got a CB. He's got those radios. He's got time on his hands. Clearly, what about roommate uncle?
Right.
Does Unc have a little time to help?
Let's hit the streets and start asking some questions, you know? I mean,
why not go back to her place of employment, talk with her boss? I'm sure she's got direct deposit. See if she went to the bank and took some cash out. I mean, there are some
direct deposit in 1986.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Early direct deposit.
Or like the beginnings.
Now, we were way behind the times at that time. Every other country was all about direct deposit.
Rio, like, in its repressed economy, no one is doing well.
That's
with the exception
where they
of one single lead. Guy who just wants to hear Blue Moon in a club, for God's sakes.
Oh, man.
The only guy who doing well.
To hear that song badly.
So
no
bad.
Nobody's ever wanted to hear that song more. But my point is, there's some simple investigative work that he could be doing.
He could be.
The mom says she has a ton of friends. Give me a name, couple names of friends. Just a couple. And he does none of it, because why do that when you can ask everyone else to do the searching for you?
It's one of those things about, you know, Mark, you and I both really enjoy Italian cinema.
Oh, thank God.
And
I didn't know where you were going for a second there. Thank God he said Italian cinema.
Yeah,
not sure.
There are a lot of ways that could have gone.
Really could have filled anything into that space.
No way.
But Italian cinema is what I went with. And in that, you often see just a regular person become a detective. And here we see a regular person, a musician, become a detective. And he's the worst detective. He's awful.
He is a person that is thrown into the position of needing to become a detective and avoiding that role at all costs.
Yeah. Like, no, I just do music. I don't find people.
Yeah,
even though that all I'm doing is trying to find someone, I don't find people. That's not what I do.
But I think where you guys are getting caught up on is he is a young, handsome man who is a musician. And that is where it begins and ends.
The Rob Lowe of Brazil.
He is the Rob Lowe of Brazil. So, is that a detective? He's just kind of looking around and, I don't know, asking for help and, you know.
So, distraught with this lack of finding her, he goes back to his uncle's place to listen to records, have sex with a neighbor?
I don't think he does, because he asks her the next day if it all went well. And I think that's sort of like a hint that he was like, it's not happening with me.
I think it went down because he took a shower.
Yep. Yeah.
I think it went down.
He's like singing in the shower and he's like cleaning himself and he's like super pumped.
And then his friend comes in and they have, he proceeds to have a full conversation fully naked with his buddy in the bathroom.
Hey, we're not, they're not repressed like we are. This is Brazil, Mark. They're not repressed like we are.
I thought that was his brother. Was Dreamy his brother?
No, he just, Dreamy just keeps saying brother just because that's kind of his thing.
Oh.
He's kind of like a real American. He loves America and he kind of sneaks English into all of his speech. Speaking of, I know we're not in final questions, but when he's in the shower, did he have a Brazilian down there?
Are you like...
No one is laughing harder than Ryan right now. He's so proud of this. I'm happy for you, Ryan. I'm happy for you. Oh, you did it. You did it. Everything you've done has led to this moment.
I would like
audio
to say
cheers.
Yes, because he has the full full chest hair trail, the trail down, and I'd love for it to just trail down to a desert. There's just nothing.
To nothing.
Just completely bald.
Just perfectly getting that to go down to bare. Oh, man, yeah.
That's funny.
Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
Then
that's
funny. He gets asked by Dreamy to participate in some crime, which he says no to, but then sort of does later.
He says no initially, but he gets sucked in.
Yeah, he gets sucked in. You know, when you're a wheel man, you can kind of say you're not involved. You can at least tell yourself, I'm not actually doing the crime. I'm just driving away when they need to. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you can convince yourself. You won't convince a court of law, just thinking about it.
But you can try to convince yourself, for sure.
You can convince yourself. Mm-hmm. That's what's important. And then his friend Dreamy gets shot on this crime and dies on the subway to the stars.
Yeah. The Let's only talk subway about... scene in the movie, incidentally.
The only one.
The only one. Even though the title, it seems to indicate that they should be spending a ton of time in the subway. But this is the only scene.
And like I said, it ends sort of with a bookend. His gig with Cazuza, the lieutenant actually finds Nesina. She's been busy helping out some local cocaine sellers, just doing her part. But
give it back to society. Vinny, the only way she knows how.
That's right. But Vinny figures out a way to trick the cops and letting her free by asking them to let her go see him play the live show. And then he starts a fight in the crowd and they escape only to end up at the junkyard yet again. Only this time it's not so sexy because she disappears yet again.
See what you did there? I like it. I'm here for it.
Saxophone.
And she runs off. And that is Erica. I think it's that time.
Oh. So bad.
Oh my god, I did not. Oh, you really committed to that.
That
really
was
committed.
Great.
Thank
wow.
you.
All right, we're going to talk about
See?
The things we love.
Live horns make everything better.
We're going to talk about the things we love and the things we hated about Subway to the Stars. Mark, what did you love?
I loved the lieutenant.
What?
Yeah,
you loved him?
I loved him. Here's a guy who is a doctor. He went to college. He became a lieutenant. They don't go into how he became a lieutenant, but he says in one scene, basically, like, this is what I'm doing. I shouldn't be doing this. This is not why I went to college. But here I am. I'm doing this. And because of that, he has sort of a laissez-faire / pragmatic point of view on who do we bust and who do we not and what do I care about and what do I not. Mm-hmm. And I like that he's initially not wanting to take on this case, and he thinks that Vina or Vinny or whatever his name is up to, he's hiding some information, and so he's immediately suspicious, as any good lieutenant should be. But he mm-hmm. kind of turned, he kind of, at a certain point, he's sort of like, well, fuck it, let's see where this goes. I have no idea where this is going to go. I mean, I'll keep looking for this girl, but I'm kind of just curious myself. Where is this going to land? And even when he, when they escape in the club scene, he watches them leave and he's like, yep, saw that coming. Does he chase after him?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, I figured that was going to happen. And he's on duty in every scene in this movie and drinking beer. Like mm-hmm. this guy, he's got it figured out. I'm only going to put in so much work, and I'm going to enjoy myself.
Can I ask you this, Mark? Do you think he was on Vinny Vina's side from the beginning, or do you think he kind of, like, warmed to him when he saw, like, that he was just legitimately trying to find his girlfriend, and he didn't have, you know, a history, he wasn't a criminal, he wasn't trying to trick them in any way, he was just legitimately looking for her, and he kind of got duped by her because she was up to no good? Do you think he kind of had a change of heart, and that's why he smiled?
I think he had a change of heart. Otherwise, that's a real dick move to throw him over an open, dirty toilet if he trusted him and believed him from the get-go. I think in the beginning he didn't trust him, but the more he saw how that he was trying to find his love, that he was an innocent guy walking around with a saxophone everywhere he went, I think he...
Sometimes
running with a saxophone. Sometimes sleeping mm-hmm. on the street with a saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just sort of learned to like him and was, like I said, he just like, let's see where this goes. I have no idea where this is going to go.
He lands on some mutual respect. This is Lieutenant Freitas, as we're talking about. He is played by Brazilian actor Milton Goncalves, and who was also in Kiss of the Spider-Woman.
No.
Which we may end up talking about on this podcast. He was also in Wild Orchid and Kickboxer 3, and he was in, I guess, at least the Brazilian release of the Disney film of Robin Hood. He was the voice of the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Aww.
Oh. Wow.
That's a good one. That's a good
Disney there one is there. A scene, Ryan, where he hears him play sax.
Saxophone.
Yes. He hears him play that instrument. And he says, if I could play the saxophone like that, I would never have to work another day in my life. And that's the moment where you know he's endeared himself to Vinny. And he's
He's on the cuts. Which I thought that was interesting, too, that he said that, because it feels like, yeah, we would all say something like that if we had this kid's talent. What I don't think is going to happen for our lead, Vinny, is that he will play the sax and never have to work another day in his life. Like, he has that talent. He's that incredible talent. But, like, I feel like he's going to struggle forever. Because Vinny just looks like that's what's in the cards for him.
Mm-hmm.
Erica, what is something you loved?
I love the sax, of course. I am a long-time, lifelong fan of the saxophone. So I enjoy
saxophony.
Sorry, saxophony. Thank you. Saxophony. Lifelong fan. I don't know if I could say love. That's a strong word. I surprisingly liked this movie a lot. I went into it thinking it was going to be sort of a fun story about a musician. I found it to be very sad and very kind of raw at times. But I didn't walk away hating it. And believe me, I will walk away hating it if I hate it. And I will lock into that hatred and I will never let it go. And I didn't feel that with this movie. I really kind of, it made a strong impression on me. I don't know if I can say that I loved it. But I did love the amount of saxophone that was featured, because I also think, in my very limited Erica's research, I mean, tenor saxophones in 1986 cost around $900 to $1,500 U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
They're expensive instruments. Yeah. They're big. They're heavy. They're gorgeous saxophones. When I played saxophone, not to brag, but I only played an alto. So they're much smaller, much more compact. Mm. The tenor saxophone is more rich. It's bigger. But it was a very expensive instrument. So I think one thing that I loved about this movie was that he never lost it. It was always with him. It was never taken. Of all the times there were robberies or, you know, misfortunes or things like that, he always kind of held on to it. Mm-hmm. And so I found that very endearing, even when he wasn't the most reliable in recording sessions or at gigs.
Yeah.
He held on to that saxophone. I just thought, my goodness, in that situation, you know, essentially living in the area that he did, and it was so poverty stricken that no one took it from him because it had to be an expensive instrument.
But no one steals saxophones. We already established that at the top.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's a tough thing. Tough to take into the pawn shop.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I loved the most was that it just, it surprised me. Surprised me. You got me, Subway to the Stars. I didn't expect that. So I think that's what I loved, Ryan.
Yeah, I agree with that. It definitely was not, I don't know what I anticipated, but I definitely didn't anticipate what we got. And a sort of, I wouldn't call this a rags to riches story, but it's got like, it's got that, it's like a guy hoping to go from rags to riches, but it's not the, it doesn't actually play that story out. And I did like this, the fact that it goes, that he's like trying to find his girlfriend. His girlfriend just disappears on him and he's just trying to find her. And he's very committed to finding her. And I think that's very cool. Again, as we mentioned, he's committed to finding someone else to find his girlfriend, because he's rather useless at finding people.
But it felt very realistic. Like, that's all you can expect from a young dude who wants to be a professional musician. Like, he's not gonna, you know, I don't know. That's what grew on. That's what endeared me to it, was that it didn't seem too fantastic. It felt very like, that's about as hard as he would look.
I mean,
he was capable of looking.
Right. Right. I mean, I definitely love the saxophone of it. I would just want to mention too that the music in this is it was written by Gilberto Gil, so including the end theme song, which only plays over the end credits for like 2 seconds, but
which is a bummer. I wanted to hear that whole song. I'm like, let's hear it.
And I almost clipped it, but it's like there's like several versions, like. Gilberto Gil did another version of it. There's a version that's for this movie. And then we also have another version from Cazuza. So who also, you know, sings on the song. So he sings on the Gil version of the theme track. There's some good music in this. There's some good atmosphere. I think it's interestingly shot. Of course, we watched even if you watch it on Shout Factory or Shout TV, you're gonna probably get it looks like a VHS rip of some kind. So
quality isn't great, which is unfortunate. Especially in the city scenes when he's up on that hot on that rooftop and everything looking out, it's like, oh, wish this was a little better quality.
I think we get robbed a little bit of how good the cinematography is because it's such a lousy version. So
for sure. Yeah.
All right. Let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I'm going to agree with both of you. I really liked this movie. And if part of going to a movie is being taken to a different world, a world that like you'll probably never see, and is totally different from the world you live in, this movie delivers. It's full of a wide variety of characters, and I'm not making a joke. Like, it's just people from all different parts of society, mostly in impoverished areas. But you get to see Brazil, and not in like the way you see it in all the touristy spots. It's like they're covering some of the real impoverished parts of Brazil. I thought the story was interesting. They introduced so many different characters that really don't have a lot to do with the plot, but it's interesting to meet them. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I hated was Dreamy's plan at the very end to rob this old couple so that he can get enough money to go to New York. Mm-hmm. It's just such a cliched plot point to drop this in. And of course, it's the day before our lead is going to have his big break and play at the club. Mm-hmm. He's being suckered into like, I need you to be a part of this. So you know it's going to go sideways.
Yeah.
It's going to potentially threaten his big break. And just a lot of movies have that trope in it. And I didn't think this movie needed it because it kind of avoids all the typical. Certainly it avoids someone actually looking for his girlfriend. They managed to subvert that in fascinating ways. And they could have had him not help out. And it would have actually made it a little more interesting of a storyline that he doesn't help in the end. And even if Dreamy's end result is still the same result, he wasn't there because he needed to do something. I don't know. It just felt like you didn't need that part of the movie.
Yeah.
I think Dreamy's section there, is bound to fail, and you know it's not going to go well. But it also, know it because the way that it's performed, like the character is performed, you're like, this guy is not capable of doing anything very good. Like, this guy is going to screw up. Yeah. This guy's not got it together. And yeah, it is a bit of a cliche there, but it also leads to the line that is the title that he says on the subway, that he kind of believes in his buddy. And, I get it. I think they end up earning it, but it is a moment that feels cliched. I would totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. Erica, something you hated.
Similarly, but maybe a different, plot point or element was, maybe I'm just dense, but I didn't care for the sort of side subplot of the girl who's being crucified. And then makes it rain rice and beans, or maybe she doesn't make it rain rice and beans and that's being dropped because we do see that airplane kind of taking off. I don't know what that added. I don't maybe understand the symbolism or, what that was meant to represent. But to me, that was like, I didn't understand any of that and why that was in there or added. And again, I accept that maybe that's on me and I just missed something. But I guess I hated that because I didn't see how that furthered Vinny's plot point, Vinny's story at all, other than having him take this side quest with the lieutenant.
Yeah.
Maybe it just showed us, again, to Mark's point, more, points and places, and maybe it was just sort of helping kind of expand that universe of, poverty and, the lengths people will go. But I don't see how it furthered the story, so I didn't care for that.
Yeah. I hated a little bit that there's parts of this movie that I just don't get, because I hate that it's like there's no DVD even of this movie. There's nothing where there's anybody that can give me some context to certain moments. Because some of that stuff, I think we're missing maybe what the symbolism is of those moments. There's certain moments that I think culturally I'm not getting.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that they make sense if you're Brazilian, but I don't know. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to hold that against the film, but so a moment that I really hated was the fact that once Vinny goes to see his mom, and no shade on her, she's a exotic dancer. That's what she does for a living. That's how she pays her bills. That's totally fine. Why does Vinny hang out and watch it?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
It's your mom, dude. Back away. Let her do her thing. That's not that's not your thing to watch. I was like, ew, gross. I don't want to watch my mom do those dances. I'm out.
Also, why isn't mom saying, like, hey, Vinny, come on, run along. This is, yeah, it's weird for me. So,
thanks for helping me with the tassel, and now hit the bricks. Like, get out.
It made me think that he had kind of grown up there. That's, like, because yeah, he was maybe, so unaffected by all of that it was, like, he was just trying to get her the applause and the recognition, and she mentions, like, his father. So he was also a performer, I think, and a musician. So it was, like, he kind of grew up in these, like, club, seedy club environments, yet somehow rose above it and was still good in a way. So it didn't really bother me as much as it raining rice and beans and me not understanding why. I had a bigger issue with the rain of rice and beans and the crucifixion of a girl.
Speaking of, let's switch to our favorite scenes. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
I hate to say this, but my favorite scene is the rice and beans scene.
Oh, no! Why? Explain it to me!
Yep,
totally.
Same.
I totally
agree.
Oh, no.
Here's why.
Oh, boy.
Because, you know, they talk early on, they had all this rice and beans that had got worms or bugs in it, and they needed to get rid of it, and we'll just give it to the poor. So, in theory, that's what happened. But when the rice and beans are falling from the sky, they say, I didn't see a plane, and I didn't see any helicopters. But throughout this movie, there are helicopters. Like in the very beginning, when Vinny is playing the saxophone on the top of the building, this helicopter is just dropping papers over him. And helicopters keep flying by with zero explanation. Yeah. And this movie has a certain amount of surrealism to it, where it's almost like a dreamscape. That scene with the rice and beans is another dreamscape. They're bringing up that there is sort of a wild religious fanaticism in certain parts of Brazil. That's why the lieutenant really can't stand it, because it makes them look, quote-unquote, stupid. Is it a miracle? Is it not? Is it just the government trying to get rid of their rotten rice and beans by giving it to the poor? I also, the whole time, was wrestling with, if I was in their position, there's no way you can pick up all the rice and beans with these pots. So am I going to actually pick that up off the ground? And, like, I probably would. So I was kind of
in their situation,
obsessed with that. And then it all stops when the girl says for it to stop. And whether that's coincidence or not, it was just, it was a very strange, surreal moment that was dropped into a movie that has several surreal, dreamlike moments throughout. And I really appreciated that. Why? I don't know that it matters why. It's just this strange moment that you get to be a part of.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if I understand it, so I understand why you had an adverse reaction to it, Erica, but I was like, look, when I think about what scene I'm going to think back on, it's probably going to be the raining rice and beans scene that just came out of nowhere. It's definitely this weird subplot that doesn't ultimately need to be there, but it is this weird scene that, like, what is that? I don't know. And even the poor could perform miracles or are capable of this incredible thing? Is it... It's really just, as Mark was saying, them raining down this rice and beans just to, like, hand it to the poor people because they just don't care about them. I don't know. But that's the thing. I don't know really what happened. It kind of made me think of that scene in Magnolia where they rain down on the frogs and stuff. And it just had this kind of moment where I'm like, I don't know what this means, but I'm going to keep thinking about it because I don't get it. So, I mean, it's just something that, I definitely will be thinking about. And again, the thing I hated a bit is tied in because I'm a little bit, I feel like, is there something that I'm just lacking in terms of context? But outside of that, it's an interesting scene and I don't know what it all means. And so it's something that I'll keep thinking about.
Plus, the mom and the poor girl that was put up on the cross, not really crucified, but put up on the cross, they are getting pummeled with rice and beans.
Pummeled,
like, just like a shotgun amount of rice and beans is being dropped on them. And mm-hmm. you can see them trying to keep their mouth and eyes closed because they are just...
It's like, it's so much.
Too much rice and beans.
Yeah. So much that I even thought, like, this probably is real to so many neighborhoods in at that time that they would love this, that they are pouring tons of rice and beans on these actors that I'm like, they probably, I mean, people would legit love to take away some of these rice and beans even off the street and go cook them because it's tough times. So yeah, it was kind of interesting. You're wondering like how the production, how, you know, they're pouring all that stuff, how that then played out in the reality of where they were filming it, you know? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
So let's go to final questions. Here
are my favorite scene. Thank you for asking, Ryan. God, I know we're not at final questions, but don't you want to know my favorite scene?
Of course. My God. I'm sorry.
My favorite scene, very different. I have two equally favorite scenes. I can't pick a favorite. I love the scene where Vinny Vina is playing his saxophone on the roof and the helicopter drops those pamphlets, because to your point, completely unexplained, you don't find out what the pamphlets are. He's up on the roof just playing his heart out, I guess on a break before he's supposed to go down and record,
right?
Because one of the audio engineers comes up to get him and he's like, "What are you doing up here?" And he's just like, "I was waiting for you to call me." Again, just up here just blasting some sax on this roof waiting for the call. My second tied favorite scene is when he is with Eunice and he tells her that he can make the sun rise. And then he starts playing the saxophone and that's how he gets the sun to rise. And that's when she sneaks off.
Yeah.
I just thought that was great and showed his like sort of ignorance and, you know, kind of self involvement that he's like so into playing that he doesn't even notice that she's snuck off.
I
thought that
scene probably
was
the most Orpheus moment of the whole thing.
Him, he's like sort of, so into his own
I'm such a good musician I can
thing I can, and impressing her that he doesn't even realize that she's left, that she's gone. So those are my tied two favorite scenes.
I completely agree. And what I love too in that scene that you brought up about him being on the roof, they're dropping those pamphlets, and this is where it goes back to the sort of just dreamlike moments in this movie. They never explain what the pamphlets are, but he also never looks up and is like, "What the shit?
Yeah,
what
he's
why are you dropping this on my head?"
Unbothered by it.
He is unfazed. Which,
so is it like news pamphlets? Is it trash?
Is this a thing that happens all the time and you're just used to it? I don't know.
Yeah. Wild.
Speaking of, let's get into our final questions. Here are our final questions for Subway to the Stars. I saw over the weekend a drone flying real low over our street, just going back and forth. I was standing in the backyard, and I was like, is that today's equivalent of that helicopter?
Yes, it is. Yes,
for sure.
Also, real helicopters are the equivalent of that.
Yes. Actual helicopters are still helicopters, but
we still have actual helicopters, especially in LA County, but drones are the worst, and yes, from an invasive ruining my moment perspective, 100%.
Have you ever requested a song repeatedly at a live show?
Yep. Embarrassingly, yes. Embarrassingly, yes. Yep. Sure have. Yep. Mm. Yep.
I went with a buddy to go see Tom York play live, and my bit with him was just to be like, "Play Creep."
Oh, no. And did you do that at every song break?
So many times.
Oh man. Oh. Yeah.
So did he play it?
No. I mean, we were at the Greek, and so for anyone that happens to know that theater in Los Angeles, it's an outdoor amphitheater, and we were on like one of the upper areas on the sides. There's two upper areas that and so there was no chance of him ever hearing any of it, but it cracked him up so much that it was hard to stop, and so I didn't. And just, but creep.
Cut to Tom York at the microphone going, I'm not going to play creepy jokes.
Yeah. Hey,
he hears it perfectly.
This is a solo concert, okay? I'm not playing with Radiohead. Mark, did you have a moment where you ever requested a song repeatedly?
No, I
can't imagine you ever would, but I thought I would ask. Okay, let's talk about Nasina's note. Tenderness must triumph over terror. Sagacity prevail over death in the name of love. Is there a point to it?
No. And I love, like, everyone's like, sagacity? What the hell is that? It's just a bad poem.
No one knows the...
That is a poem that you write when you are coked up out of your mind.
Getting high in your own supply.
I wonder if that poem... it made me wonder two things. It made me wonder if it was her trying to throw them off the scent of her. But what I liked about it was the mom, when you meet her mom, and her mom's like, my daughter was an idiot. We thought she... I was so old when I had her. They thought she would be stupid. Oh, she was a genius. Everyone loved her. She was a straight-A student. Like, the mom is so, like, lost in her own reality. So it made me... But hearing that poem and then now hearing you say, it's based on a play and whatnot, I wonder if it's tied back to...
Yeah, it's a good. That's a good point.
The mythology or something like that.
Yeah,
again, that's my own ignorance. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know either.
But yeah, I kind of liked it, and I liked that Mark's favorite lieutenant got mad about it that it wasn't shared with him as evidence. Right. Like, what would it prove? It's just a poem. Yeah. Where's it gonna lead you to anyone? Yeah,
doesn't take the investigation anywhere. But
yeah,
something we've already kind of mentioned, but I think it warrants re-mentioning. Is Dreamy's mom doing okay just sitting alone in that open air market?
That's Dreamy's mom? The blind lady?
Yes.
Aww.
No, she's not. Everyone else has packed up their wares and left, and she's the only one there.
Everyone?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Not good.
Not good.
Dreamy just leaves her there all night?
Well, but then Vinny leaves her
for
too.
Him to come by and pick her up. It's not happening at this point.
And Vinny just takes off. He's like, see ya. So
it's not his mom.
No one's coming to help.
Oh, man.
Does Vinny get another gig?
I think so, because he kicks ass on that final performance.
I'm not sure. He's so unreliable, but...
I know, he is unreliable. He should. But he's quite
good. So talented. I don't know. What do you think, Mark?
I think he has to move to a different town because I think he's exhausted all of his relationships. And Erica, I think you said, I mean, he's completely unreliable. And everyone, as talented as he is, he's always bailing on his gigs or having to leave early or not
They're
doing
like,
what
he's talented,
told to do.
He's cute, but he will leave the stage if a cute girl is there.
He will
take off.
If
a cute girl
off.
Is present, he will take off. Or if somebody has requests and money, he will take off.
And he does it twice. It's not like it was a fluke that he walked off the stage. When her other coworker is at the club, he just walked off the stage and says, I don't need to play anymore. I'm good to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, I wonder. I have to think that the only thing that keeps him working is the fact that nobody else can play the saxophone. it's one of those instruments where everyone's like, this guy
it's
sucks,
tough one.
But like, I don't know. Who else are we going to get, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and this is the late 80s, so that's that third revival of ska is right around the corner. So,
so close, dude. We're so close. Mm-hmm. We're so close. All right, let's
And you know what, Erica, that brings up a good point, though. Ska has typically come back in vogue about every 10 to 15 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
from like we're the due. Peak No we're Doubt due. Phase. We're way due for Scott to come
we're
back.
We're overdue. We're we way need overdue. Another, yeah, we need Scott to come back big time. Yeah, yeah, we're ready.
Yeah, come on, Mighty Mighty Bosstones, where are you?
We are
just
ready.
Wait in the shadows.
We are ready to get back into ska for maybe at most a year, and then put it all back to bed and be like, "I'm good. I got it out of my system. I'm gonna get back to the stuff I usually
listen
to."
Could we trick you? Can we trick you, youngs, into getting into ska?
Just for like 1 year, maybe a year and a quarter, and that's it.
I don't think I feel like we go through things too quickly nowadays. This cycle
of ever been so close to tragedy or been close to folks who have. Have you ever felt some pain so powerful, so heavy you collapse? Come on, youngs. Just Google Mighty Mighty Bosstones impression that I get.
Just give it 6 months. Yeah. Go to a couple shows. Get, you
just
know.
Just give it.
Skank a little bit. Just get it out of your system. And then just like, you know, and then you'll just like, you'll put that hat and your suits back in the closet. Oh, you're like, I'm good. Honestly, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. I did it.
I had a moment. You know, it was no big deal. And then I'm over it. Anyway, let's get into some research. Here's our research for Subway to the Stars. This is a co-production, Brazilian and I believe a French co-production. It's common for Brazilian films to be co-produced by other countries. According to an AP article in 1987, the Brazilian film agency, Embrafilme, that they actually would have a government agency that produced a lot of their films, they received 600 scripts in 1986, and they could only finance 22.
Wow.
This was the also because less than half the population of Brazil even went to the movies.
Jesus.
And even a smaller percentage of those people went to movies that were produced in Brazil.
I need to finish the script for Steeman. God.
And then
get it out there. Imagine.
To Brazil.
People are going to be super into it because of the schlongs.
That's right.
I got to finish this.
So this was actually causing several Brazilian filmmakers to actually try their luck in Hollywood. Many of them had success going to certain prestigious festivals such as Cannes and so on. And they were starting to write movies to try
Ryan,
to get
Ryan, I know
success
we're not a final questions. I hate to interrupt
passed,
Ryan's
we're past
research.
It. We're
but,
past it.
But do you think Steeman has a chance at Cannes?
I mean, it seems like a short, so I don't know. I think Slam Dance is probably
oh, it's a long
bet.
It's a long.
It's a long. It's a
oh,
schlong.
It's a long.
I don't want to interrupt. You continue,
Ryan. A schlong
Ryan.
Film. A schlong film, if
it's
you will.
A schlong film.
Do you have a schlong film category?
Steeman, a schlong film.
Yeah.
It writes itself.
So, with
I
all
wish
these,
it would. I wish it would write itself.
It would help you out.
100%.
With all these Brazilian filmmakers heading to Hollywood, De Guess was against it. In fact, he said to the Associated Press, "He said a film is a success because it reveals an original side of a country. If you forget this and try for a Hollywood remake, you lose your audience. We can't base a whole industry on American money and actors." So he was trying to keep everything in Brazil. Not sure exactly what the budget was for this, but there was another article I found from the Associated Press from 1987, which revealed that Embrafilme said quality Brazilian films could be made for $300,000 to $1 million. So somewhere in there is probably the budget of the movie. It was entered into Cannes, and it played in competition in 1987. It ended up being Brazil's entry for Best Foreign Film at the 60th Academy Awards, but it was not nominated. Mm. It was originally slated for a February 1988 theatrical release in the United States, coinciding with the release of Night Zoo.
Are we still talking about Night Zoo. Oh my God.
You bet we are. We'll never be done. It was instead released in theaters starting in May 1988. And why it was released, much like Night Zoo, it was from Film Dallas, the independent film company that New World invested in, which released Night Zoo. And however, Film Dallas is on a lot of those posters coming out in May 1988. When he hits Los Angeles and some of the West Coast, that's when it says New World Pictures Presents. Which is interesting. So, reason being, though, New World Pictures, this is the explanation that I got from Entertainment News Service. New World Pictures, which matches Film Dallas dollar for dollar on all productions, It was gaining some prestige of releasing classy Film Dallas foreign pickups such as Subway to the Stars and The Right Hand Man from Australia, which we will get to.
The Right Hand Man!
Yeah. Perfect Australian
accent. Nailed
it.
So
right.
Sorry.
First try.
So God, sorry. Really thought we were suddenly in another country.
Thought you were down under, Ryan. You know... Still at home.
Erica. She is so proud of that accent. Here's what Film Dallas head Sam Grog said about the company. He said, "The only intelligent way to approach the motion picture industry is to be a generalist, to be a businessman, to be sensitive to creative impulse, to be a marketer, understand the to be a little bit of a showman." Say that word. "Every day I balance artistic decisions and business decisions, and I always hope that I maintain my balance and don't fall off the wire." The company falls apart by the end of the 80s before even New World does. Anyway.
But he is still on the wire.
But
the company was dropped out.
He is still on the wire. The company fell off the wire is my point. Sam, you're doing great. Released on New World Video in October 1988, Subway to the Stars hits video $70.
Oh.
Well, $70.
These prices are always outrageous, especially when you think about $70 in 1980s dollars. That's like $150 bucks. It's crazy. At least. But this one, this feels like a higher budget movie. It feels... This is a quality movie. It's well done. There's a lot of good acting in it. It doesn't feel cheap. So when we think about these pricing, the pricing of these VHS movies, this one I would say is, for what you get in return, it's a worthwhile investment. I'm not saying it's going to be in my top five. But if we had a top 10, it might slide in.
But you're not saying it's not going to be in your top five.
True.
Also releasing around that time on video, Angel 3, The Final Chapter.
Oh, my God.
$80.
Angel was more?
Jeez, oh, yeah. Louise. Angel 3. And Dead Heat.
Oh, Dead Heat.
$90.
$90.
$90. Woo.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. You want to know why Dead Heat became such an underseen film? $90.
$90.
No kidding. No kidding.
You're going to have to, as a small little mom and pop store, you're going to go, well, I'm getting maybe two copies of that. One copy.
Yeah.
You're not going to buy tons of those.
At the Tower Outlet, it was $7.
Yep. It was not much. It was not much. And
Ryan,
that is it.
Ryan, is your dream? It's not it. It's never over. It's not
okay.
Done.
Sorry.
Don't try to run away. I'm still looking for you. Ryan, is your dream going into someone's basement who bought all of these movies for $70, $80, and $90 and just kind of filed them away in the basement perfectly, and you just go down there one day and you're like,
not really, not exactly, because
all right,
if you're
that's it. Then that is it. Okay, then.
If you are buying them for video, you are going to get a pretty rough copy, much like this one, which even has a little S on it, which obviously this was from some sort of video store somewhere. The top of it has to be taped. It's been through it. And the copies are going to be pretty poor inside. So, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Somebody has this in their home collection.
Like a lot of these I get, they'll have like a little, this is family video from family video. So a lot of these are like video store copies. Now, if somebody bought all these and they were just for themselves spending $90, $70 and late 1980s money just to keep them for their home library. I mean, heck yeah, that would be amazing to see. Like a pristine copies of these things would be amazing.
Yeah, but for $400, which I admit is a lot of money in the late 80s, you could also buy yourself a second VHS player and copy the movie to another tape.
Oh.
And now you own it.
Well.
Do that five or six times, and you've made all your money back, right? Not to say that we ever did that.
We never did that.
No.
Well, that is it. That is Subway to the Stars. The start of Foreign Film February 2. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you stick around for more foreign films as we go through all the foreign films released by New World Pictures. If you want to listen to any of our past episodes and the episodes for this month, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. It's where you can find all of our episodes. You can buy our articles. You can read them. They're free. And you can buy a t-shirt. We have so many different t-shirts. Go buy a t-shirt to help support the show, or you can write a 5-star review. In fact, I dare you, if you have the balls to write a 5-star review. I don't think you do. You know
write
what?
Write a 5-star review and then buy an article, you wimp. Come on, I dare you.
And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description.